Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. Eat me, as the cookie says in Alice in Wonderland. I am
the way you said that just sounded like an insult. Like just like an 80s insult. Eat me, bitch.
It was a double entendre. You just heard the voice of Nadia Cater. Nadia is a great, great friend of the show and our Alice in Wonderland correspondent. This is their second Alice in Wonderland episode. And I think the second we have no other Alice in Wonderland episodes. We have the other one we did and then this one.
I feel like, yeah, that's a good point. That's kind of surprising considering there's 10 million Alice in Wonderland adaptations.
And 10 million episodes of PCMC. You think we'd get there. But we've gotten to this point. So the last one, if you don't know, was, I don't remember how many years ago, but it was it's just called Alice, but it's known in pop culture as the stop motion Alice in Wonderland. The little girl's real, everything else is stop motion. It's pretty trippy. Go listen to our episode on it.
Taxidermied animals. If anyone's interested, is a lot of the animals are just taxidermied stop motion.
Yeah.
That's great.
This is another weird Alice, but it goes weird in a totally different direction.
I'm all for it.
So today we're talking about Alice in Wonderland from 1966. This was a TV movie. It's actually only like 70 minutes or something. It was made for the BBC. It is black and white. It was produced and directed by Jonathan Miller, who's an interesting guy. He had been part of Beyond the Fringe, which was like, I don't think it was ever on TV or anything, but it was like this comedic thing that was part of the Fringe Festival, but aside from it and kind of making fun of it. And it was him and the comedian Dudley Moore and the comedian, what's his name? Is it Peter?
Peter Cook.
Peter Cook, yeah.
I was looking at this like right before we started.
But... yeah, Peter Cook plays the Mad Hatter in this. Or you know him as the priest in the old priest in Princess Bride. Marriage. He's that guy.
Oh.
He does a lot of great voices. So he was sort of a comedian figure first, but then he made a groundbreaking like science show called The Body in Question, which was kind of like, I guess, a little bit in the mold of Carl Sagan's Cosmos, but it was all about biology and he hosted it and it was a big deal. And then he did just a lot of other stuff for the BBC. He's a really interesting guy. He did a good documentary later on in life about belief and atheism and disbelief and stuff like that. It was really interesting. But he directed this and he had a lot of things. He's no longer with us. He had a lot of things to say about this. And I think it's worth looking through some of the things he said, but also taking them with a grain of salt, because sometimes I think he was being facetious. Sometimes I think he was just fucking around. So one of the famous things in this version is nobody wears costumes. They're still the rabbit and the March Hare, but nobody dresses like an animal. They all kind of dress in either Victorian clothing or sometimes like military clothing. And he said, oh, it's because we had all these big British actors and we wanted to see their faces, which I really don't believe for a second. It's obviously a much deeper choice that he did there. But this is a really... well, you know what? Nadia, I've already talked too much. When did you first see this and what are your feelings about this version?
Well, just a little personal context is I'm going back to school. I'm still working full time. I am so so exhausted all the time. And something that has been really helping my mental health has been keeping just a movie, like watching movies. And even though I've done that before, I try to make it like a little intentional. So the past couple of months, I will like think about, okay, what are movies I've heard of or thought about or seen something I've never gotten around to actually watching it. And I remember years and years ago, you told me about an Alice in Wonderland that takes place a British TV version takes place at a university. And that has always stuck with me as like one of the weirdest interpretations. Why
And I
not?
was only partly right.
It's just the beginning, yeah, because
Right.
then the rest of it is just out in the forest. But yeah, so that kind of stuck with me. So I did some digging and I'm like, you know what? Let me finally figure out how to find this. And I became kind of obsessed about it,
It's hard to
trying to find
find,
it.
too.
It is hard to find. And it got to a point where I'm like, I kept looking for like, okay, so one of the big actors in this is Peter Sellers.
Yes.
So I was looking, okay, Peter Sellers. Peter Sellers was in two
Yeah.
Alice in
Versions of
Wonder.
Alexanderland.
Yeah.
Right,
Version of
right.
Alice in Wonderland, playing different characters, and they're not too far away from me. I think the other one's from the 70s. So
Yeah.
like this is 1966. But I still, you know, any looking through Letterboxd, Google, whatever, but you know, Alice in Wonderland, hundreds of things come up.
Yeah.
And it's not usually this one. So eventually I just like was looking on Amazon. I was like, okay, I finally figured out the year. Let's find it. I found a used DVD from BBC
Oh,
America.
really?
Yeah. But you know, I paid $24 for a used DVD. But it wasn't,
Okay.
it's actually in really good condition.
All right.
It has some documentary on it about like Alice in Wonderland that I haven't
Oh,
really
you know what? I
seen.
think I saw that. I think I've seen what you're talking about.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I got the DVD. I watched it. I'm like, this is really great and weird. And like
Yeah.
weird for not weird in the ways that you would expect. So I'm like,
Yes, I
okay.
agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that what's really like, I don't even know if we call it irony, but having something so weird like Alice in Wonderland, the story,
Yeah.
and then stripping it down to like its barest bones
Yeah.
and just a Victorian era,
Yeah.
and it you can really see the threads of that. Like, so Lewis Carroll's story has a lot in it. There's a lot of different interpretations. One of my least favorite is that it's all about taking drugs and being on a drug trip, because I think that's the laziest interpretation
That's
ever.
pretty lame, yeah.
Yeah, but the biggest ones are interpretations are it's about nonsense and like Victorian society being
Yeah.
ridiculous, and having these like mores that don't make sense. And that's kind of where this adaptation really focuses on. It's like it focuses on the nonsense of the
Yeah.
lives of adults through the eyes of a child who has no patience for any of this. She's like the
Yes.
sassiest Alice.
Yes, she's yes, I agree. It's so funny. I wrote that down too. She's so not into everything that's happening.
Oh, she immediately hates it. Like the
Yeah.
minute she goes through, yeah, and so the movie starts with her, you know, hearing the rabbit, following him, and going through a tunnel in the forest, and then that leads to an abandoned university,
Yeah.
which she goes through. Yeah, and it's just about nonsense and being
Yeah.
a pissed off child, like stuck in the
Yeah.
mores of the lives of adults.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, one thing I also wondered, do you think that the so it has a lot of the classic Alice like parts in it, like eating the cookie, drinking,
Yeah.
her size constantly changing. Do you think that's an allegory for puberty?
Oh, that's an interesting question I had not thought of.
Well,
Perhaps. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure I haven't seen any, but I'm sure there's psychoanalytical reads of Alice in Wonderland. Probably
Absolutely.
many. So, I mean, maybe it is like girl becoming woman kind of thing.
Well, I kind of think of like, so Alice is supposed to be like 11 years old or something. That's kind of a stage around them, like 9 to like 13. That's a stage in life where most children start to realize that like they start thinking a little more critically about the world around them, right?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
they notice things they haven't seen before, and they want to
Yeah.
be treated differently than being a child, but adults still see them as children and they kind
Right.
of like brush them off. And I feel like that's what this adaptation does a lot. It keeps emphasizing that Alice is stuck in this kind of world
Interesting.
of nonsense.
So yeah, I think a lot of what you read into it, I also read into it, and that's what I like about it. So like, where to start? Well, first of all, I want to say that I don't want to go through this film beat by beat. I don't see a value in that. I think we should just talk about it like a, people would talk about it. I think most people probably know the narrative of Alice in Wonderland. So let's talk about the nonsense. One interpretation, right? And I, Jonathan Miller, I think, said this is why he wanted to start it at least in a university or an empty university, is because there's one interpretation that Lewis Carroll was making fun of academia and the jargon of academia and the high-minded nonsense of professors, which is fun. So the nonsense, right? So if you look at like, and it's been a long, long time since I've seen this, but if you look at like Disney's Alice in Wonderland, right? The nonsense, and by nonsense I mean like the nonsense words, the nonsense dialogue. You know, why, how is a raven like a writing desk? You know, every day the lessons got shorter. Why? Because they're called lessons. That whole shit, right? In the Disney version, I think they really play it up as playful and funny for like little babies to laugh at. But in this version, it's really like theater of the absurd. Really, they're using dialogue straight out of the book, but it, you almost don't need it at all. It could, it almost plays more like gibberish. Like it's just word salad being said. You know, it, this version is more, makes less sense. And I've never read the book, by the way. But this version makes less sense than most other versions. This version is, you know, barely holding on, barely grasping the idea of it being a narrative. It's mostly just stuff happening and her going from one stupid conversation to another. And the little girl who plays Alice is named, oh, Marianne, what's her name? I just looked this up. What was this kid's name? Oh, Marianne Malik. This is the only movie she was, this is the only thing she ever did as an actress. And Jonathan Miller said he cast her because she had a dour, depressed Victorian child nature to her. And she plays it in a very interesting way, which is she's very monotone. She may, maybe because she was young and not really an actress, but she plays it very monotone. She's also directed to never look at what's happening. Like she'll be in the frame looking off in the distance and barely engaging with what's happening. It's really interesting the sort of disaffected air that she has, both through her performance and the way that she's staged.
Yeah, it's almost like she's just so checked out,
Yeah.
which kind of like that kind of like made me think about the puberty thing too, of
Oh
just like
yeah.
I'm just so tired of your crap.
Right.
And the nonsense, which you're I agree with you, a lot of it is such word salad, but it's also interesting like the different kinds of word salad.
Yeah.
Like we have the academic side, but
Yeah.
then we also have like the authoritarian, which it comes
Yes.
from the female characters and like the Duchess, the Queen, that kind of thing. So it's kind of like you're trapped in endless nonsense different
That's a good
flavors.
point, right? One's more like political nonsense. One is, you know, the Mock Turtle is very kind of academic nonsense.
There was a character, and I didn't always, they don't always tell you who the characters
No,
are.
right. You kind of, no, they don't at all.
Well, I also think that's something like adults do too. Have you ever been in like a social setting and there are kids there, and sometimes adults just completely ignore them?
Yes,
Has
that's.
that, have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, because I do it. No,
I
I'm
try
nice to
to
people's
like,
kids, but
yeah.
no, I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of that's what kind of like was hitting me with the different kid stuff is like mostly they ignore her until they demand something from her. And the demands don't
Yeah.
make sense.
Of course.
It'll be like, okay, we're having a caucus race, and then all these characters, which a caucus race is like a political race, but they're doing it literally where people are
Right.
running.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, so everyone wins. Okay, what do you, what happens when you win? Well, you get prizes. Okay, where are my prizes? Well, she has them. Or so Alice has
Right.
to go through her own stuff and give adults
Yeah.
things. It
Yeah.
was so bizarre.
It's extremely bizarre. Yeah, it's okay, so there's a lot to unpack here. So in terms of them not telling you who people are, right? Because like you would know who the rabbit is because you look like a rabbit, right? But no one looks like anything here. Sometimes they'll refer to somebody, you know what I mean, like the Duchess, but or the Queen. But other than that, you kind of have to figure out who people are. I actually think that this film special, whatever you want to call this, it's almost operating based on a shared public consciousness. I feel like it's operating under the sense that you already know what Alice in Wonderland is. Like, I do think you could enjoy this as a completely weird, experimental art film without knowing what Alice in Wonderland is. But I feel like they are expecting you to know. Because even in the credits, right? In the end credits, when they give the characters names, you'll see an illustration of who they were playing. So it's sort of like this was the rabbit. This was so, because there's also other moments that are completely glossed over, like they just weren't interested in. Like when she cries, right? There's the thing where she cries and her tears fill up the room and it's like an ocean. There's like one shot where she's crying and then we see a image of like a slow motion image of like people like in a pool, it looks like, and then that's it. It's like as if the people who made this were not that interested in showing that, but only like slightly hinting towards it.
I was wondering about that. I was like, it's either disinteresting or they didn't have the money
But
to the team.
they filmed some shot.
Yeah, they filmed like one shot.
Right. They probably didn't have the money because BBC is notoriously cheap.
Though I gotta
But
say, like, it is cheap, but this production didn't look cheap.
no, well, I think they're getting a lot out of really good cinematography.
Absolutely. What was interesting about that scene, the flooding scene, was like it was so short, and there was just like this, it's so short and just not paid attention to narratively, but
Yeah.
it also was a kind of, it put you in a really weird place, like having
Yeah.
a move like that, the Wonderland kind of start in that way. It
Yeah.
was so, it felt like, yeah, like a really strange, absurdist moment in a movie full of
Yeah.
birds.
Well, the movie, right, but despite how weird it is, the movie also has a sort of acoustic feel or a black box play feel of, like you said, it's the bare bones of Alice in Wonderland. Even the special effects are just done, easy and camera things, like she eats the cookie that makes her big. They just do, old-fashioned forced perspective. Or when she eats the other thing that makes her small again, they just have a big table. You don't see her grow, or there's just cut and the table's big now. It's almost subtle in a way. I think the more fantastic elements or magical elements aren't really there, but are only sort of like hinted towards. Again, because I think they expect you to know it. Although Jonathan Miller said that this was not for children, which is
I
funny.
agree.
But it did come out in 1966 on December 28th. So it's in between Christmas and New Year. So you imagine that families would be watching this. But I could see children really hating this. I think, and this is not an insult, I do think that this is dull. But I think that's a qualitative thing about it. You know what I mean? I don't, meaning it's a quality of it, not my qualitative idea about it. I think it wants to be. I think dull is one of the things that it's doing. It's dull to Alice, right? Like Alice is just, she has the hangdog look always, right?
I was gonna say it's like a slow cinema kind of thing where it's like,
Yeah.
even though the movie's only 72 minutes long,
Yeah.
it feels long. And I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way. It's just more like you're immersed in something. It's like kind of like your regular speed is 2x, and
Yeah.
then you watch this movie and it's at like 1 or even 0.75 or something.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. See, now I'm wondering if she had played it differently than the way she plays it, would the whole thing seem different? Because she is our protagonist, right? We do identify with her. She is the character that brings us through. Is my feeling of it being dull coming from the fact that my avatar on screen doesn't give a shit about what's happening? If she were more like, gee golly, wow, would the whole thing feel different? It's an interesting notion.
I feel like it would fall flat for me.
Okay.
If she was like, wide-eyed and puppy, what is it called? Puppy tailed? Wide-eyed?
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Wow, okay, yeah. Bright-eyed and bushy tail. I think it's kind of like, but maybe this is a more of a personal thing, of I'm kind of bored of movies that explore the same beats with children and their interaction with the world. Like, I know it's a completely different type, but I think of like the 400 Blows being about a protagonist who is trapped in this world of adults, who is never taken seriously, and he's frustrated. And you could feel that in that movie. In this movie, I felt that. I was like, children aren't always like tragic orphans or happy-go-lucky Pippi Longstockings. They have their own multifaceted emotions and feelings, and I feel like that's what's interesting to me. I wouldn't say this
I
is
agree.
interesting to children, but like about children, not necessarily for children. I think that's an interesting perspective.
Childhood is melancholy. It's one of the things about childhood, right? Think about just being bored as a little kid or just being just out of it. That's why I love, Maury Sendak's work. You said 400 Blows, and I'm glad you said it because I do always think of that with this movie. It's like I would put 400 Blows, this, and the movie version of Where the Wild Things Are as like a nice trilogy of sad kids, of like maudlin children. Because it is like I mean, so going back to the beginning, before she goes into Wonderland, and all she does is lay down and fall asleep. Right, like it's very, this movie is very, very just clear, like she's dreaming. It's not like a surprise or a weird interpretation. It's like she lays down and falls asleep because she's fucking bored. But it begins with, we'll talk about that opening shot that's amazing. But after that, the real like beginning of the narrative is you see Alice and her sister, and they have some sort of maid, and the maid has put them in front of a mirror. Again, a mirror is a big thing in these stories, and it's a big visual motif here. And the maid is like combing their hair and making them look like pretty girls and like putting, put on your little hat now and tie it, and they just want to go out and play in the woods. Like no one's even going to see them, yet still they're going through this nonsense ritual of being prettied up to go out and play in good clothes. And it's sort of like there's very little dialogue in that scene. And Alice's sister is kind of standing there bored, like, come on, let's go. And Alice clearly just wants to go and play. Like, she's not interested in what her hair looks like at all. And finally, they go out and play, and they just kind of like a walking around in the woods. And then they just sit down, and then they lay down, and then she falls asleep. It's just sad. It's not like this great big adventure. This is some weird dream she's having on a boring ass day.
I think the Alice falling asleep is a common, like, 'cause I think that's how the story starts. Like, I remember, the stop motion Alice also is similar. It doesn't have that scene with the maid dressing them, but it has Alice and her sister in the woods already, and she falls asleep. I think that's what happened in the Disney version. I could be wrong, but I did read Alice in Wonderland, but it's been a really
You
long
did.
time. Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff that they don't cover in other stories or adaptations. I think partly for time and partly because it's kind of hard to film. Like, I think there's a whole section in the book where she finds just like a porcelain like world. Everything's porcelain, like
Well,
little dolls.
I think that's Wizard of Oz.
Oh, is that Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, there's a porcelain world in Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay. Wait. Now I'm just mixing up my weird children's stories. But this adaptation, I think, was one of the first times I've seen something with the mock turtle, because I don't think I've seen stuff with the mock turtle. I don't think it's in the Disney version.
I don't remember the Disney version enough. I don't remember it in the taxidermy one either.
No, but they're on the beach and he's talking about going to school and saying cool
Right.
shit.
And it's John Gielgud, like big British actor.
How did BBC get so many big British actors to do a TV movie?
I think it's a smaller world there. You know what I mean?
Okay.
No, really, I feel like, like they all do everything. And, this was going to come out around Christmas. I do think, look, Peter Sellers did it twice. Alice in Wonderland's a famous story. So I think, probably, also, how much work does it really have to be? It's not long. You kind of come in, do your little bit, and you're done. I could see any actor wanting to do it.
Okay. I guess it's also like one of those like famous stories that are done over and over again.
Yes.
So I guess it kind of almost the equivalent of like when you see famous actors doing like Shakespeare adaptations, like it's
Yeah.
just like a big thing that people want to be involved in because it's classic text. Yeah, but I think the sleeping thing might also be where people get the drugs from, or like the
Oh, yeah.
caterpillar smoking a hookah. Oh, crap. Wait. Okay. So there's a scene. I know we're not doing beat by beat, but there's a scene where Alice is being forced to recite a poem, but she can't remember it. She also has memory issues that they emphasize in this more than they do in the other ones, where she has this like kind of
Yeah.
identity crisis because she doesn't
Yes, it's
remember who she
true.
is. Yeah. But anyway, she doesn't remember who she is. This guy keeps demanding who she is, and she doesn't know. And he's like, he looks like a professor in a library. He's holding a magnifying glass,
Yeah.
and he makes her recite some poem that she did incorrectly, which I think that also sticks to the childhood thing or the nonsense of being forced to remember these
Remember something.
poems by heart for some reason. But who was that? Like, I don't even know what character that was supposed to be, 'cause they don't explain it. I mean, it's okay if you don't have the answer, but I was just thinking like that was a big scene that was weird and aggressive.
I feel like I looked up the actors on IMDb to try to get an idea of who people were.
He might have been the caterpillar, because doesn't the caterpillar make her recite a poem?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, but again, because they're all people and they're all like not
Right.
introduced, you wouldn't even know.
Right. Let's
He
see.
really makes you do the work.
Yeah, I wonder if I could find it. Let's see.
Sir Michael Redgrave as the caterpillar. Huh. I don't know who Michael Redgrave is.
Sounds important.
Oh.
It's a sir.
Oh, yeah, whatever. But I'm gonna make an assumption that that was the caterpillar just
Okay.
because the caterpillar tells her to
Yeah.
demands from her like poetry.
That's a very surreal scene too, because he's got a dollhouse that he's like dusting, and then she comes and is standing on the other side of it, and we see her through the dollhouse, which I guess is, I remember from the Disney animated film, her like being in a dollhouse and like growing too big for it and coming out of it. I guess it's kind of that. And there, but at what point in this she does shrink down, but she doesn't, it doesn't seem like she's shrinking down in a literal sense. Like we just see her inside the dollhouse for one shot. But I want to
Yeah.
go back to something, which is the 400 blows, which is, I think, even though this is England and this is TV, I think that this is very influenced by French New Wave filmmaking. It very much feels very French New Wave to me. It has a playfulness, a surrealness. It seems to lean into having, at least in Alice, a non-actor, give you something real. A real emphasis on mise-en-scène, and I mean that in the critical sense. Like, mise-en-scène means placing on the stage. It comes from theater. But mise-en-scène, from a critical point of view, means like reading the composition for meaning. And I feel like composition is really used importantly here. Like, composition is used here, is crafted here to tell the story and to make meaning. I think every shot looks beautiful, and I think every composition is thought out. Nothing does every You feel the hand of the creators in everything you see. And that, and it's sort of that acoustic feel, like I was saying. and also some of its odd editing. It just felt very inspired by French New Wave, especially someone like, Francois Truffaut, because it does come off with
Yeah.
its kind of feeling to it.
I would agree. Absolutely. There's also something about the soundtrack too. It just made it
Yeah.
feel even more 60s. It was Ravi Shankar, kind of like
Okay.
sitar.
Yeah, sitars, like drum beats. I think at one point I heard a harpsichord. It really feels like it doesn't feel like professionally recorded. It feels like, someone's playing these string instruments or wind instruments in a room, and then someone's just recording that and putting it into the film.
Yeah.
Something else that's interesting about the soundtrack, and I want to know your thoughts on this, is through a lot of the movie, there are like barnyard sounds. There's birds chirping, there's pigs oinking, there's chickens clucking. Sometimes it makes sense, sometimes it doesn't make narrative sense, but it's kind of always there.
Yeah. That was so weird. Like just I mean, it's odd to say that of just like
This
because of
weird thing.
what we're covering, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was disorienting, and I think that
Yeah.
I think everything was put together in a way to make it feel disorienting.
Yeah.
Like the way the filming, the cinematography. Also, I don't know if you noticed, but there are some scenes that at least one scene. Where Alice is next to a mirror. I think it's in the
Yes.
courtroom,
Yeah.
and like her reflection is not moving in the same beats as her.
Yeah.
It's like everything is just kind of like so absurd and surreal, and I think the animal sounds are part of that, of just like it could also be like kind of almost mockery with the animal sounds, because it was a lot of the politics, and when people are getting heated, you'll hear more of that. Like
Yeah.
oinking, and there was something
Yes.
like cruel in a way about that. Of I don't know if
No,
we're supposed to
that
make that
makes
association.
sense.
It's
Well,
very, very
yeah.
surreal.
Well, during the caucus race, you hear it a lot, right? Especially because, like, the caucus race happens and they're like running around in a church. And we remind me we have to get back to like spaces at some point. They're like in a church and they're like, some of them are genuflecting. Is that genuflecting? No, genuflecting is like when you bow, right? Some of them are like doing the sign of the cross. They're like running, but they're really like shuffling and just like doing these weird motions. And it's like they're mocking people. And then they run outside and then some old woman falls asleep. And then the rest of them like start biting at her, and then you hear the pigs, and that's when like they finally stop, and they're like, "Who won? Who won?" And then whoever it is like, "You all won."
I
Yeah.
well, what I'm wondering if like I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but like if the director and Peter Cook, who played the Mad Hatter, were also big satirists and
Yeah.
comedians. I'm wondering, and it's a caucus race, which we know is
The
a
political thing,
politics
yeah.
race. Maybe that was something to that of just like it's the way people scream and squeal and do terrible, shitty things to each other, and then it's just like, okay,
Yeah.
who won? It's over.
Yeah.
I just think about like the way politicians talk about each other.
Yeah, yeah,
Like
yeah.
during I mean, there's an exception now because we're in a weird place politically in the United States, but generally it's kind of
Are we?
like
We are? The guy who
Oh,
knows nothing. What do
what's
you mean?
happening? Well, I was just thinking like you'll have these politicians saying the worst things about each other
Yeah.
and how shitty they are. And then you'll see pictures a month later, these people are at dinners and sitting next to each other and being friends. Like
Right.
it's so bizarre. And it's like, okay, there's a whole world out there that we don't
Yeah.
understand. I don't know.
It's also. Yeah, I have a few thoughts on like
Go ahead.
going with what you were saying. You're making me think of Animal Farm and pigs. Pig noises and pigs themselves are kind of a motif in this. At one point, the Cheshire cat turns into a pig, and did that happen in the book, or is that some weird thing that this one does?
I don't remember.
It's
I do
odd.
know the Duchess's baby turns into a piglet. Like that happens in the book.
Okay, so that happens here, but it's also the but maybe they're just melding it together because they say it's a Cheshire Cat.
That's
Okay,
played by like a tabby.
right. All right, so okay, so another thing I think is because no one's dressing up like animals, the animal noises are kind of like not standing in for it, but almost in a satirical way mocking it. Also, I think some of the ways that people act in this are so animalistic. They're acting more animal than in other versions. Like in other versions, they might like be dressed like a caterpillar or whatever, but they're just a person. They're just an anthropomorphized caterpillar. Whereas in this, like, even though they're people, sometimes they're acting very like animals. There's something very like, I mean, maybe that's what draws me to the Freudian of it. Like, there's something very base about this. There's something very like, I could see like it, this thing easily leading itself to like a psychoanalytical semiotic thing of like just going through every little object and being like, what does that mean? What does that mean? And we'll, in some ways that hints at next week's episode. Yeah, the pig noises. Oh, okay, all right. So wait, should we talk about spaces now? Sorry, we're all over the place, but that's the PCMC way. All right, so spaces are very weird in this, okay? So we oh wait, you know what? I'm sorry.
That's all
Let
right.
me see, let me do this first. I want to talk about the opening image. It begins with it almost like a painting. It's the girl who plays Alice, just a close up of her, and she's like in a bush, like Homer Simpson meme. She's like in a bush, she's surrounded by leaves, and it's just her like sad looking face. And we hear something which I later looked up and found, because I originally thought this must be from the book, but it's not. It's from Ode, Imitations of Immortality from Recollections of Early Childhood by William Wordsworth. And Wordsworth, I'm not very learned, but this is what you hear. There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, the earth in every common sight, to me did seem apparelled in celestial light, the glory of the freshness of a dream. And then it says Alice in Wonderland. So it's interesting that it begins with this poem that's about dreaming, and also about nature and the wonder of nature. And it is this very striking opening that it's kind of its own extra textual thing. The next time we see her, she's inside getting her hair combed. So like, what is she doing in that field? Like, it's just a very striking opening image. And we should say that Alice sometimes is speaking, but then there are other times where she's not speaking, but she's speaking via voiceover. Like, there's a whole scene where she's walking with the Duchess and they're having a conversation, but she doesn't move her mouth at all, yet she's speaking, which is a really interesting, odd choice. And also, sometimes she's doing her dialogue in whispers. So it's voiceover and she's whispering it. And that's how she's doing this. She's whispering. So the very first thing is this little girl's sad face, and then she's whispering some poem, and you're like, what is going on?
Yeah, that was weird. There's also she seems to have dialogue with herself, but it could also
Yes.
be another character, but it's her voice whispering and she's responding to it.
Right. Yes.
Which
Yes.
I
That's a
was wondering if
very.
that was the cat or not, because the Cheshire Cat in this
Oh.
doesn't really do anything. He kind of just hangs out, and then at one point his
In the
giant head's in the
sky.
sky.
Yeah,
And
he's
it's
like
just, but it's a real
impossible to
cat,
tell.
so he's
Yeah,
just
yeah.
kind of sitting there doing nothing.
Right. Yeah, that yeah, she does have like dialogue scenes or so. But then there's others just where like there's one scene where she goes into this house and you hear like someone say, "Marianne, bring me my gloves." But like you don't see who's saying that.
So you
And
have to know,
yeah.
which is it's the rabbit keeps calling her Marianne.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah,
But it's a woman's voice that says it, I think. Or am I wrong?
I
That guy
think it's
does
just a
have a weird
British,
old voice.
I think
He's
it's just
Paul
a British
McCartney's
guy.
grandfather in A Hard Day's Night. Do you ever see A Hard Day's Night?
No, I haven't.
It's the first Beatles movie. It's very good. This guy plays Paul McCartney's grandfather, who's like this funny old guy who like comes along with him and gets into trouble. Hard Day's Night is great. I think it's actually the best Beatle movie. Although Yellow Submarine is also very good. We gotta do PCMCs on the Beatle movies.
That's a great series. I'd love
There's
that.
four. There's Hard Day's Night, which is like sort of satirical, kind of like it's a black and white satirical kind of slapsticky comedy. Then there's Help, which is like very slapsticky, like parody kind of comedy. Then there's Yellow Submarine, which is this great trippy cartoon. And then there's Let It Be, which is like this sad documentary. Oh no, and then Magical Mystery Tour, which is like straight up art film. So there's five Beatles movies. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about.
Well, that's a weird thing to think about, though, right? Of like, there's just a series of movies about a band.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really do that anymore.
They also really were trying, they were really courting J.R.R. Tolkien to let them make a Lord of the Rings movie. And they wanted like Ringo to be Frodo. And he was like, no. He was like, this is a terrible idea. And I'm not gonna let you do that.
I'm okay with
Yeah.
that. I can't imagine that being interesting to be
All right, let's talk about
Ringo as
spaces. Let's talk about spaces.
yeah.
So there's no real rabbit hole. She goes through like a little tunnel. And then we're in this academic building, and this really reminded me of Cocteau's Beauty and the Beast. You've got all these windows open, and the curtains are blowing inward, this long corridor, and she's chasing the rabbit. And then you'll see like weird, I think they filmed it in a hospital. I don't know if it was really an academic building, but there are like weird posters around of like educational things or hospital things. And then we are in a church at one point. We're outside in a field when they're like playing croquet, but with pink flamingos. We are with the Duchess. When we first meet the Duchess, we're like in like a kitchen.
The Marianne scene, she's in someone's like cottage that's just
Yeah.
full of knickknacks. Like
Yeah.
it feels, some of the spaces feel claustrophobic.
Yeah. Well, the whole movie feels small, but not in like a bad way, like they didn't have money. Like it feels like he wanted it to feel small. Because there's also this movie doesn't care about transitioning things. Like something will be happening and then something else is happening. Like no segues, you know, which I guess is very dreamlike. But like she'll just be in one space and then suddenly be in a completely different space. It ends in like that court, that like courthouse. The mad tea party is outside, which I guess is traditional for that. Yeah, it's just really interesting because there's nature. At one point she's like she's walking down a trail, but then on the side of the trail is like just someone in a bathtub washing themselves like out in the open. It's just full of surreal like nonsense, like visual nonsense. Like at the end when they're in the court, like there's all these like I want to say box seats, but it's not a theater, but like you know, on either side, it's got that parliamentary thing of like people can stand everywhere and watch. And like there's just one guy like shaving. He's like got like a bowl and a mirror and he's just like shaving with a long razor while the trial's going on. It's just a visual gag. It's just a visual joke.
When they're on the beach,
Yeah.
yeah, which also again, that wasn't a transition, but it was like the closest thing we get to one where the Duchess,
Yeah.
when she's walking with Alice and she asks her, "Have you met the Mock Turtle?" And
Yeah.
Alice was like, "No, well, you have to." And then it's just all of a sudden she's on the beach. There's
Yes.
no, we have no idea how she gets there, and she's talking to the Mock Turtle and whoever else, the other guy that's supposed to be with him, talking about nonsense and
Yeah.
a
Yeah,
lobster
who's that
dance.
guy?
I don't know, man.
He's not the rabbit. Like, who is that guy?
The Mock Turtle and the Griffin. Okay, I'm looking this up. I'm not a, you know, I don't have a file cabinet of Alice in Wonderland stuff, but
Also, I at the Mad Tea Party, there's besides the Mad Hatter, there's the Dormouse and who else? One other person, I'll look it up because they're played by Michael Gough,
yeah, it's
the Marchair.
Martyr.
Yeah, Michael Gough, who's Alfred in the Tim Burton Batman movies.
Oh.
Yeah. But he plays like it's all played so weird. There's so much to talk about. What are your favorite performances?
In this movie, I really like the Mad Hatter. I feel like
Yeah.
he's playing it in a way that is, I think that's kind of true with the character of like he's
Yeah.
playing it like everything's a big joke, and he's the only
Yeah.
adult doing that.
Yes.
But it's all a big joke to him, which again is still inconveniencing Alice and doesn't help her. Like every adult in this does not
Yeah.
help her.
Yeah.
I also I don't know if I would say I just think all the performances are really interesting because like the
Yeah.
Duchess is played, and I don't know if this is
Oh,
a British
I wanted
thing.
to ask you about what you thought of
The
that.
ma a man in a dress, which I'm like, I don't know, this just feels like a British thing. But the Duchess is
Yeah,
playing it
maybe, but
straight.
they could have done that with anybody. They could have done it with the Queen. Like, it's a choice to have the Duchess played by a cisgendered male in a dress. And I
Yeah,
don't know
but
why.
I don't know either, but he I think he plays it well.
No, he
Like
doesn't.
it's not
He doesn't. Yeah.
it's just such a thing that's not really a thing anymore. I kind of just
Yeah.
took, yeah, I just kind of took that as like he's not a trans woman, he's not,
No.
he's not a man in a dress. He's like, okay, I'm playing a role. And I think everyone just like gives it ex with the exception of
Well,
Alice, which I think is because she's the way she was directed and she wasn't a professional actor. I think everyone's playing it like really seriously, and there's something really fascinating about that.
Well, all right. So I feel like from our 2026 eyes, we wouldn't bat an eye at a gender swap like that. But I feel like this is 1966 England. They must think it's hilarious.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, it's a British thing. Like,
Right. They're like, how funny is this? It's this guy. But going back to Mad Hatter, you know what I really like about what he's doing is, well, first of all, he keeps spiking the camera. He keeps looking directly into the camera, which I don't know if he was like, he was part of Beyond the Fringe, so he might have been very close to Jonathan Miller, the director, but he just keeps doing it. Like he's talking right to us, which is fun. But he plays it, I feel like, in a very satirical way. I feel like he's making fun of a certain type of stuffy British person. Because some people play the Mad Hatter as like almost like the Joker, I'm laughing maniacally and I'm just completely crazy. Like that SNL sketch where it's Steve Buscemi and he's like, I eat my own poop. And everyone's like, whoa, that's a little too mad. Do you remember that sketch?
I don't.
Look up SNL Mad Hatter, Steve Buscemi.
It's great.
But anyway, he's not playing it like that, and he's not laughing like that. He's laughing like a dumb guy who's entertained by his own stupidity. Like he's like he's laughing at his own bullshit that he's saying, and he's not really listening to people. I feel like he's playing the kind of guy you might meet.
I kind of took it as if I use that analogy of being a kid at an adult party,
Yeah.
right? So that's kind of how I took it of like you don't really understand what's going on and no one cares enough to explain it to you,
Yeah.
but they have expectations of you. I took him as almost like your asshole uncle who's so over everybody, but is also everything's a joke to him.
Yes,
I feel like
yes.
everyone has an uncle like that or some
Yes.
or a cousin
Yeah.
who's there, but you know, he's doing his own thing to
Yeah.
tolerate being in a room full of idiots.
Yeah. And I really love at the trial at the end when he is talking to the king. Because first of all, it's him and Peter Sellers, which I think is the other great performance here, comedically. And he's like, oh, I'm just a poor man. And like, I love all of that.
That was good.
Peter Sellers, I think, is very funny in this. Even like just simple shit he makes funny. Like it's not that funny, but he makes it funny. Like there's the king's son who says something stupid, and the queen's like, he's such an imbecile. He's like, yes, but he's tall. He's very, very tall. Like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? And
A very
like,
British comedy.
yeah, like just lo some of his line deliveries of like just nonsense lines are like very funny. Yeah, I really like Peter Sellers in it, and I really like Peter Cook. Yeah, Peter Cook. For some reason, I want to call him Tim Cook, but that's the guy who runs Apple. Tim
Yeah,
Apple as the
Tim
president.
Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love those performances. I also weirdly I do like the Duchess. I actually
Yeah.
find the Duchess really interesting as a character. because she's kind of having her own thing and she's difficult, but also is ha she has a moment with Alice when they're walking through like the woods together that I think is almost cute.
Which what like what's the moment?
It's right before she goes to meet the Mock Turtle. It's just like they're just talking one-on-one while walking in the
Oh,
forest.
right, and the
And that's,
camera just keeps going around them in circles.
yeah, and that's like the only time Alice is really like at least is talking to somebody. Like
But
most of
she's
the time it's
not
people
in
talking
that
at her.
scene. That's all voiceover, and that's the scene where she's completely not moving her mouth.
Yeah, that's
But
just
you're
weird.
right. Right, but you're right. She is engaging. And that feels like a scene where the Duchess is actually giving her some actual advice about something, or at least guiding her in some useful way. Because isn't she like warning about the Queen or something like that?
Yeah, which their relationship, the Queen and the Duchess have a very weird relationship.
Yeah. I
They're
like the
like,
Queen too. The Queen's good too. And John, you know, Sir John Gielgud, like, you know, he's like this famous British. He has this gravitas, and it works so well for the Mock Turtle as like this overly stuffy guy. And he's funny in his dryness. Like, we had a teacher who was a turtle, but we called him Tortoise. Why'd you call him Tortoise? Because he taught us. Like, the way,
yeah.
like, yeah. And I,
No, that's
yeah.
something else I wanted to say. I love all the weird wordplay, and
That's all
that's
this fucking
really
is. That's all the book is,
yeah.
I'm guessing. It's
You're
all that.
right.
Like, lesson, you know.
Which I think that's part of what makes this such an enduring story. Like it was written in the 1800s, and we still talk about it. We still, even if you've never read it, you know the baseline of Alice, similar to Wizard of Oz. Like it has this huge staying power. It's been adapted so many times.
I mean, they're really like Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland are really like reflections of each other. They're like the British version and the American version. You know what I mean? Let's see. Look at my handy dandy notes here. I should say, even though she's like, obviously she's not really an actor, she's doing a good performance. I mean, she's like, to have all that crazy shit going on and her just having that hangdog look, that, you know, that 1,000-yard stare. I mean, that's good. And I can see why he cast her. She does have this like sad little face.
I think it really works for this movie. It's jarring at first, but when you kind of like you just let it sink in, I think it really works.
In the trial at the end, she starts to grow again, but she doesn't eat anything. She just starts growing, right? And then it ends in a very weird, abrupt way. She says something disrespectful to the queen, and the queen just says, "Off with her head." And we see, like, it just turns into madness. You see, like, not a true extreme close up of the queen's mouth, but a optical close up, meaning they took the film and then they just using, you know, lenses got like a close up of the mouth, so it's like distorted in a way. And then she wakes up, and then that's it. It's over.
I think they did a pretty good job with what they had, and it doesn't, like I said earlier, it doesn't feel cheap or rushed. I think it's just really interesting stylistic choices. And you're right, Alice just keeps like growing, and then people are yelling at her because her shape keeps changing, but she's like, I can't control that. Which I think again that ties into the childhood and puberty thing. I don't know,
And
wait, do you remember anything like when you were a kid where people would say things about your body or voice changing that just
well, yeah,
felt
you'd see like an
uncomfortable?
uncle or whatever, or not an uncle, but like you'd see like a distant someone, and they'd be like, the last time I saw you with you this big, remember me? I'm cousin Phil. And you're like, I obviously don't. I have no memories from when I was a baby. You know, that's why when I do talk to kids, I try to never say shit like that.
Me neither.
Also, I had an uncle who thought it was I guess we'd call it problematic now. It was more just like corny. I had an uncle who thought it was very funny to ask children if they had girlfriends and boyfriends. He'd be like, "Hey, you got a girlfriend?" And it's like, "I'm six, so no, but thanks for asking."
I
I
also
often
hate
will ask
that.
kids, my shtick is I'll ask kids if they have a job. I'm like, "You have a
No,
job yet?" That's
I
my
think that's a
shtick.
good, yeah, that's a good
It's
stick.
less
That's a good,
sexualizing.
yeah. I think of like when I was a kid where people just ask me things that are kind of a joke, but I'm not in on the joke. Or they'll
Right,
like,
right, right.
or comments like, why are you so short? Or look at your feet or something stupid like that. And I'm like,
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm short. Why are you asking me this? I'm a kid. And I kind of felt that same thing with what was happening in the courtroom. Like, stop growing, Alice. Or Marianne, or fuck, they're calling her. But yeah, being a kid sucks.
Well, that's the thing. Like, people don't talk about that enough. Like, I like again going back to one of my favorites, Where the Wild Things Are, the book, I mean now. I just love that book. And at the time it came out, it was like controversial. And they were like, well, he's a bad kid and he bites his mother. And he's like, he's just angry. Like, kids can be angry. Why remove that as an option for what kids can feel? Kids can feel every emotion. You know, I feel like, you know, I love children's programming. I love animation and, you know, stuff like that. I love Mickey. But, you know, I do think that bad children's stuff is condescending. Or pandering just for money. And the good kids stuff, like the Muppets, or everything Jim Henson did, or everything Mr. Rogers did, like or even J.K. Rowling before she became an insane person. Like, it's treating kids with a respect. It's being respectful of them and talking to them, not at them.
I like stuff like that too. As now that, you and I are older and we know more people with children, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I feel like I'm seeing different types of parenting than when I grew up. It's not a bad thing necessarily, but it's like when I see, like, I have a friend who has two kids, and the way she talks to them is kind of like, you have a choice, or okay, this is your option. What do you want to do? And I'm like, you can ask kids what they want. You don't just make the decision for them. It like blew my mind. And yeah, so I kind of like think about like parenting a lot in that sense, or like children and how much children are kind of st are stifled. And like they have to be a certain way or live up to an ideal that is almost impossible.
Well, it's like the Cat Stevens song, Father and Son. He says, from the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, I'm not a parent, so I can't speak with any real authority. But I love what you're talking about, because, like, what we get, like, isn't progress the idea about everything? Like why would you rely on, like, tradition with child rearing? Like, my grandfather did it. Like, well, then you're smarter than your grandfather, and your father's probably smarter than him and knows more and has more knowledge at their fingertips. You know, like why not progress? Like, people that are like, oh, I wouldn't do that, my parents didn't do that. And it's like, well, that's stupid. Like, you know, anyway.
You have a choice. I think it's people don't realize how much of a choice they have. And
Which
we
some
kind of,
people do, you know.
it's like, well, when your parents did that to you, did that make you feel like shit?
Well, that's the
Yeah.
thing. I think sometimes they perpetuate stuff because they don't want to deal with something happened to them that wasn't right.
Oh, that's an interesting. I
You know
didn't
what I
think
mean?
about
Like,
that. Yeah.
I have to treat my kid the way my parents treated me, because if I don't treat my kid that way because it's wrong, that means my parents were wrong. And some people just don't want to deal with that. It's like that Bob's Burgers, when Bob's like, I think I had a bad childhood, and Linda's like, I know.
Like, of course. And he's like, what do you mean? Look at the way you're standing. No one with a good childhood stands like that.
Exactly.
Oh my God, I
Yeah.
love that.
I wanted
Absolutely.
to close with one question for you.
Okay.
Not to put you on the spot, we could both think of this together. So this is our second Alice in Wonderland weird ass movie. But you know, they don't do this. Well, I was gonna say, do they do this to Wizard of Oz? There's the Wiz, but I don't know. Like, I there seems to be something about Alice in Wonderland that's malleable in a way. Like, what do you think that is? Why there's so many weird versions of Alice in Wonderland that do all these different crazy things.
Well, I think one thing is that it's a recognizable story, obviously. I think while While the story is satirizing Victorian culture and mores, the way it's done is that it's easily malleable. Like, it's not so specific to the Victorian era that you can only make it in that way. Like, I don't even know if you asked anyone on the street who's about Alice in Wonderland, would they even know it took place during the Victorian era? There's really not much, like, whatever version you've seen, I'm thinking especially the Disney one, there really isn't much there that tells you what the time period is. And the same thing with The Wizard of Oz, and I think because the comedy could be, or the storytelling can be broad, that makes it more adaptable. I also think because it's a public domain story, that also helps people want to adapt it because, hey, we don't have to spend money on that at least. I also think that having children as the main character is also pretty good, in that it's interesting to make children the protagonist because it's from their view. So I think it's just a lot of things like together that add up. It's also a lot of it is, as we talk about, kind of nonsensical. Like, if you look at Oz doesn't make any sense. And I
Of
think,
course, yeah.
and of course, something that is nonsensical, I think, can be adapted to be nonsensical in so many different ways.
Yeah.
So
That's true.
there's a lot to, I think, to, it's almost like clay. Like, there's a lot to mold here. What do you think?
Well, I guess, I mean, Alice in Wonderland and Wizard of Oz are in a sense they're like truly fairy tales because it's about the adult world being scary and confusing. And maybe that is enough of a universal thing, even to adults, that the framework can change, but that basic idea of you're a kid and you're put into a world and it just doesn't make any sense. The way people are talking doesn't make sense. The way people are acting with each other doesn't make sense. Nothing makes any sense, which is like what growing up is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it's really enduring. I was trying to think, like, before we start recording, of like what other children's stories have we seen adapted in such a way so many times? And the only thing that could really that I came up with was like Pippi Longstocking and Anne of Green Gables. But both of those stories are very much in their own time periods.
But are there like weird versions of those?
I
Like
would,
this?
no, I don't think so. I think they're usually played pretty straight. So I can't really think of anything. There's something about those two stories that are just so enduring. Or the worlds that they build are so enduring, rather.
Interesting.
Which I think also plays a part to that kind of timelessness that you and I were both talking about, of like, because it's such a world outside of ours and it's so nonsensical and strange that it's really easy to just work with that rather than like very specific 1950s New York, for example, something like that. That
There's always
that's
going to be children, and they're always going to grow up. And we were all children who grew up, and we all have inner children, that, are constantly dealing with this bullshit.
Yeah. Did you ever see the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland movies?
Yes, I saw the, well, I saw the first one. I know there's two. I remember not hating it, but I was in a charitable mood that day. I remember being in a charitable char well, I can't say the word charitable mood that day. I was like, there's things here I like. I mean, it's basically stupid.
So, like, every Tim Burton movie is basically
All the
stupid.
latter day stuff. Latter day Burton. No, but I mean there's good stuff. I kinda like Dumbo. Anyway, I can't have this conversation again. But Nadia, I think we did it. I think we talked about the BBC Alice in Wonderland from 1966. If you want to watch it, the only place I found it was on, well, it's in parts on YouTube, but it's also for free on Dailymotion. So, and it only takes 70 minutes of your time. Just
It's
take some
fun.
acid and then watch it. Why not? You know what I mean? Challenge yourself. I've never done. Have you ever done hallucinogenics? I never have.
Did mushrooms once.
How was it? Did it change your life forever and open your brain the way all these mushroom people like are constantly
lying
preaching?
about.
Yeah.
Well, I took it in a very specific instance. I've heard of people doing mushrooms and just like watching cartoons at home, which I'm like, I'm not gonna do that. Yeah, actually, me and Danny went to a guide in California, and we just it was like a whole almost like how this woman put does it is like a spiritual experience. So
Okay.
it's really kind of hippy dippy new age, but
Sure.
it well, one thing, it made me feel great. And if safe to transform. So I guess I thought about things at the time where or afterwards, like a week after I did it, I feel like I had all these realizations about my life and people in it.
Okay.
Yeah,
So
so
that's
in
safe.
a yeah,
Yeah.
so in a way it did hit me. I've
Do you feel
also
like today, right now, you still think in a different way, or you had those revelations and you went back to who you are?
I think it was more like I mean, for the, obviously I'm mostly the same. I think the one thing that changed is like one realization I had was kind of like at the time I was having like my brother-in-law was going through all these changes where he was like trying to figure himself out and he was telling us all this stuff that we knew he wasn't going to do. You know, you ever meet people like that? Like they talk
Yeah.
so sincerely about stuff they're going to do and you know they're not going to do
They
it and
got
they
big
never do it.
plans and it never goes anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and then like at the time it was really stressing us out because he was talking about moving and making like all this stuff and like pretty much upending his life. And then like I had this, I thought my first realization was, oh, I have to tell this guy he's full of shit and he has to stop doing this stuff because everyone's tired of it. And then as the days went on, like after my mushroom trip, I kind of had a realization of like, that's not my place and that's not my
Right,
business.
right, right, right.
And unless he asks me directly, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
Why do I have to burst this kid's dreams? And I think that's kind of like what changed in me in that, like, okay, I actually have choices here. Just because someone tells me something does not mean that I have the right to give them advice. And that's what I got out of that, which is
It's
really
interesting
weird.
that your realization was about a different person. You're like, I realize that guy's full of shit.
Well, I think what was really about myself was more like, I don't have to insert myself into other people's lives.
Oh, okay. You don't have to
That's
mix
kind of, yeah, it
in.
was focused on him, but like the biggest thing was really, I don't need to tell people what they're saying or doing or feeling is wrong. That's
Okay.
not my, unless they
Yeah.
tell me, hey, I want your help or your advice. That's not my business. I'm like, okay, you know what? You're gonna figure yourself out?
Okay,
Sure.
that's a good realization to have.
I feel like I didn't realize that I did that so much in my life. So I guess it comes from my mom just needing to be right all the time, and I feel like she does that. And I'm like, I don't
Right,
want to be 60 and doing that stuff. So
right, right,
so yeah, that so yes, I think a lot of people talk about bullshit about realizations, but
Yeah.
I think when you're in a
The doors
space
of perception were blown open, and I could see God, and I realized I'm just one with
nah.
everything.
Yeah, that's
And
nonsense.
now I have a podcast that's
Oh,
I have a podcast that's sponsored by Athletic Greens. And I what a
yeah,
mind. What's that thing that it's like it's I think it's a THC drink that people like, you gotta drink this monkey mind or I don't know, whatever.
that sounds stupid and
Stupid shit.
dangerous.
Yeah,
Do
stupid.
it. Do it
So I never
in.
did this. I never did this. Well, my drug date, I've been sober for like 11, 12 years or something. Long enough that I'm like kind of forgetting. Like lost count. I counted up until 10 and now I'm further. No, I think it's gonna be 12 this year when I'm in September. September 15th would be my sober birthday.
Whoa.
But even when I did stuff, I never did it because there's always that fear looming over you of you can have a bad trip and your head can get you could your head can get you into a bad trip. And I am a depressive person. And so I always felt like knowing how, Victorian and dour I am, it's going to be a bad, horrible time. And then some people are like, no, you just need a good guide who could take you out of it. And it's like, I don't know it because also that now that's in my head. Like, even if I wasn't gonna have a bad trip, I have in my head fear of having a bad trip, which will give me a bad trip. So I never did.
Yeah.
I never did any hallucinogenics.
Which, I think that's fine because I think you're right in that if you don't feel safe or comfortable, it doesn't matter. You're going to go into it feeling scared, and
Yeah.
that's going to affect you. So why put yourself in that unless you feel like it's ready to confront that, if you even want to, which is you don't have to. And some people get a lot out of doing these trips. Actually, I have a friend who,
I'm not against it. I do think it's
yeah.
fun to make fun of
Oh,
mushroom
sure.
people.
Yeah,
That's
they're a
like
little.
comedian Caleb Heron has a joke where he's like, "Do you know that mushrooms do this thing to your brain that for the rest of your life, all you can talk about is mushrooms?"
That's a good one. Well, I mean, everyone has different experiences and like choices, but yeah, I mean, I have a friend that every once in a while she does like a guided ketamine trip because she been through a lot in her life, and she said like every time it's kind of like I have to unravel myself.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and I'm like, you know what, if you're doing this stuff to
There you go.
heal, good for you.
There's also like microdosing, which supposedly can be very helpful.
Oh
You know, whatever rattles your snake. I just made that up. That's not a real saying.
rattles your snake. No, that's interesting. I want to
This
see
has
a like a
been
thing.
PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I was joined by my good friend and yours, Nadia Cater. Nadia, we end just about every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.